I'm Jeremy Greer.
And I'm Gary Butterfield.
And this is Days of Future Cast, the podcast where Gary and I talk about all things X-Men. And we are back with more X-Men 97. And we're in the back four episodes, Gary. And this is where shit gets for real.
Super for real.
Yeah.
It's hard to stop watching.
It really is. It really is. So like a little peek behind the curtains. We're recording two episodes today. And the second episode is going to be on episode 8, which is like starts the three part finale. And I got to the end of that and was like, I'm not going to keep watching. Like, I don't want to, like, I'm going to have to rewatch these again later. So I'm just going to wait, but I just want to rewatch. So
yeah, it's no bad thing to rewatch them, but it does make me very eager for season 2.
Yes.
Which we still have some time. Yes. I mean, we were talking just in the green room about something else, but I'm only watching TV shows once they're out, other than the ones I'm already in. Mm-hmm. Like, I'll watch X-Men when it comes out. But this is the last new TV show I'm getting in that I'm going to watch as it comes out.
I get that.
Only when it's done.
Mm-hmm.
Don't want to wait. Let's get into it. There's a lot to talk about.
There is.
Big episodes.
So today we're covering season 1, episode 7, Bright Eyes, which was aired on April 24th, 2024. Directed by Emi Yonemura, written by Charlie Feldman, J.B. Ballard, Maria Wilson. Cyclops focuses the X-Men on finding Bolivar Trask. However, when the team locates the Sentinel inventor, they realize they have all been played by a mastermind.
Or a master mold.
Oh, nailed it. Nothing real significant. I think everybody's pretty caught up with the events. Genosha is the biggest thing that we're dealing
with.
Yes. I didn't notice anything new in the intro this time around. I may have missed something, though.
They're just choosing who to highlight. So there's a little bit more Nimrod in there. There's a little bit more Cyclops.
Okay.
In there, they show Rogue and Gambit kissing.
Okay.
You know, on the basketball court.
Sure.
Their hoop dreams. We start off with a funeral for Gambit. I really like this. I like that we do that because they would do that.
Mm-hmm.
I remember it happening all the time in the 90s in X-Men. Comics, and it's like, yeah, no, it makes sense for them to stop here. Gambit's shithead brother and all those people are there.
It's really funny, like all of the background people.
I love
here.
It. It's been a minute since we've seen those ladies.
The only thing I don't like about this, and this is such a tiny nick to pit, is Nightcrawler's robes.
Okay,
I don't know why. It just really, like, I know Nightcrawler is like the religious person, but like I didn't think that he would, like, you know, put on the fucking priest gown to go to his friend's funeral. And he's doing the eulogy. He's leading the service. Don't get me wrong. But at the same time, like, so are you, like, for real, Cat? Like, are you ordained? Like,
sometimes in the comics, but not around this time. You know, I feel like the people who did the cartoon were just like, oh, he's the religious guy.
Mm hmm.
You know, and they didn't have that much time for him. I thought you were going to say the one thing you didn't like is that for the picture for the funeral, they blew up a Gambit trading card.
Well, I actually really like that. Like, that's the best way to go.
100% they went to Kinko's and said, can you make this big?
Yeah, absolutely.
With this Fleer Ultra Gambit card.
Absolutely what I expect Autumn to do for my service. So, Nightcrawler goes through the eulogy and he talks about how Gambit had sort of endless faith and potential, but he was haunted by a life of bayou crime, which is very, very funny to me.
Wouldn't himself off the hook. Like, he thought himself irredeemable, but actually he was a hero.
Exactly.
You know, he said that he couldn't do it, but he was bluffing. You know, every gambler has a tell. Modesty was Gambit's. Like, he was a hero.
Yes.
It's a good eulogy. It's sweet.
Yeah, this is very nice. And as the coffin is lowered, we see Jubilee sobbing and wondering where Rogue is. And Logan tries to comfort her, saying, like, grief is a lonely war, right? Like, she has to be dealing with this in her own way. And Nightcrawler kind of corrects him. It's like, hey, you weren't there in Genosha with me. What she's battling is more than grief, and Jubilee is right to be afraid. And then we're going to go into a pretty extended Rogue sequence, which is just fucking amazing. This is gonna rule so much.
Incredible. This is one of the first, they've done it before, but this is where the action starts using some things from the Marvel versus Capcom games. Rogue does moves from that video game.
Yeah. Which is great. Which is amazing. Like, it's not a, like, I don't think that's a negative at all. Like, those games kind of rule. So
they super rule. And it's a cool idea, you know, just to kind of show people fighting and everything. Like, there's the end fight in this. There are parts of this that, like, you know, I wouldn't be me if it didn't feel like 10% too anime. This stuff doesn't.
Yeah.
Like, this part of it doesn't. You know, Rogue flying, you're shooting across the desert, you know, it just smashes into a government facility, and they, you know, they tell her to stand down, and she starts fucking busting things up and fighting Max.
Yes.
You know,
I love the soldier who says, "This is a top secret government facility." Like, well, you're probably not supposed to say that. Like, even if somebody's attacking it,
just you're supposed to say this is a, you know, again, this is a Kinko's.
Yeah.
She's fighting, smashing the robots, and we cut over to Colonel Ross before they recast him as Harrison Ford, down in the facility. You know, everyone's like, "Oh, we're getting scared." He's like, no, this is meant to hold in Hulks."
Yes.
You know, and Rogue still breaks in. She's so pissed.
Right after he says, like, you know, "Oh, well, she can't possibly," and then she just breaks in.
She's just a swamp mutant.
And she's there, of course, to find Trask. So she grabs him and shoves him against the wall. And he's like, "I thought you X-Men were like the good guys." And she says, "You killed all those guys. Now you got me."
Yeah, and super that's great.
Like, you know, the politics of the X-Men have been back and forth as far as but this stuff in the, for years, right? Like, but it's, this feels so good and cathartic.
Yeah.
Of just like, you know, I'm going to scorch through all the red tape and like, no, you have me. Like, Rogue's journey in this episode, I think, is amazing and incredible, and I absolutely love it.
Well, it's one of the big themes of the entire reboot, or, you know, of the comic, is taking a more modern kind of political stance, a more explicitly leftist stance to X-Men shit.
But it feels, you know, even like, kind of, like, if you, I just to compare this to modern politics, and not to get like too deep into it, but like, if I'm watching the political party, the Democratic Party in 2025, like, they're not anywhere close to what I want them to be doing, right? And like, it feels like this is what I want. I want them to be slamming through doors and fucking hold people against the wall.
It's the really refreshing thing. It wasn't a great crossover overall, but that was like a refreshing thing about Avengers versus X-Men. You know, the Avengers are the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
And you know, the X-Men are the Bernie Bros, are the DSA, off to the left, being like, no, we actually have to fucking do something. We can't just go through these systems because systems aren't working.
Exactly.
You know, and it's our people who are dying for that. You know?
Speaking of dying, we go back home, and the UN is denying the X-Men any more help in Genosha. Cyclops is talking to the president, and he is abandoning them for fear of the optics of the whole thing. And he tells Scott to be patient, but of course, Scott is all out of patience. Jean shows up, says like, "Hey, the team is ready to go." And Scott is kind of having his own, we don't quite say the words, we'll get there in a minute, but like, Scott's kind of starting to realize that, like, oh, this is what Magneto continually warned us about, like, and Madeline,
he's blaming himself. And Jean's like, you know, Jean's like, nobody could have seen this. He's like, Magneto did.
Yeah,
you know, like, Madeline saw this, people did see this, actually. You know, and this is the beginning of Jean and Cyclops kind of making up. Like, they've been having this tension, you know, and Jean says like, listen, you know, maybe I was a little bit off, like, I'm sorry that you lost her.
Yeah.
You know, like, it wasn't your fault that you thought she was me and had a baby with her. Like, you know, I kind of thought, you know, I wish I'd reached out to her. You know, I kind of saw her. I like the idea of having a sister, you know, like, we shouldn't be mad at each other. This was a weird fucking thing. That's neither of our fault.
Exactly. Yeah. You know? And Scott says like, hey, you know, none of this stuff matters. Like, what we need to do right now is show the world hope. Like, we need to get over to Genosha, and we need to basically like show people that Xavier's dream works. Like, it's time like these that dreaming matters most. Which is a great line. And they arrive at Genosha, and we see a bunch of mutants helping with recovery efforts. This show has been Cameo City, and it's going to continue to be so. I'm sure I'm missing stuff, but like, we definitely see the Blob. We see Angel from Grant Morrison's run, not Archangel, but the other Angel, and then multiple Man, and there's a bunch of other mutants running around here.
There's a weird touch in the when they show inside the infirmary, they have a guy, the little guy with a huge head who kind of looks like the leader but short. Mm-hmm. He's been in the TV show. He was one of the Savage Land mutates that okay. worked for Mr. Sinister.
What a weird pull.
they're not mutants. It's really weird. I think that somebody just was looking for background people and accidentally grabbed a Savage Land mutate.
There you go.
Yeah. I don't care for the Savage Land mutates. I don't like thinking about them or anything. I just recognized him as a guy.
Didn't realize this was a trigger for you, Gary. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I don't. It's bad. They're dumb. They suck.
We see Amelia Vault. She's running the medical tents, talking to Hank, kind of telling him like just how horrible things have been. When Trish Tilby shows up and wants to interview Hank again, Hank describes Genosha the death of a dream. which is very sad.
I like that Beast is like, she's like, hey, let's take a walk. This is really horrible. And he's like, okay. And then he slowly hardens over their conversation. Like at first she's willing to let her back in. If you remember, she did that weird expose, talking to the X-Men, and basically calling out Scott on having a baby.
Yeah.
And like hiding it and just was doing kind of shitty journalism things.
You are hiding a child, says T-Pain to Cyclops.
Exactly. It's very, very Jerry Springer.
Setting us up for a whole different kind of rat beef in 2024. Rogue, meanwhile, has tracked Gyrick into Alaska. This is a snowy area with this cabin. And right as she lands, we see Captain America pop up. I was actually like genuinely excited to see Captain America pop up in this. This is not MCU Captain America. Like this is like 90s, cartoon Captain America. But at the same time, like he shows up and I don't know. It was just really fun to see like, we're going to have some outside world stuff interacting with this, as you should.
Well, and it makes the idea here is that like, if we're watching this and it's part of that universe, like the Spider-Man cartoon and everything takes place in this, they wouldn't just ignore Genosha. And Captain America, who is, a superhero in this, isn't ignoring Genosha. The difference between him and the X-Men is he doesn't have skin in the game, so he's doing it by the book.
Yes.
And that's easier to believe than the Avengers just wouldn't care.
Yeah, exactly.
Just like, not our fucking problem. What's Wonder Man up to? Like that doesn't make any sense. They care. They're trying to do it by the book because again, they're worried about optics and everything. And that's what makes this series so resonant with current times. Mm-hmm. That even the people who do want to help with current politics are so worried about decorum and optics that they're letting people die. And in this point, in this, Captain America represents that.
And this, kind of is solidified by Rogue calling him America's top cop.
Yeah. Yep.
And, he says like, hey, I'm looking for Gyrick too. And he leads her into the cabin as they take this like weird elevator into what looks like a secret lab.
Is this from Winter Soldier?
It feels like from Winter Soldier, yeah, right?
They go into it. I was like, is this the same bunker, the AIM bunker from Winter Soldier?
I just don't remember because I think the AIM bunker was in the military compound, like where he.
Yeah.
But I mean, it feels very much like, oh, this is another one of those, right? Like a secret elevator down under something with a bunch of weird computers running around.
There's no Arnim Zola down there.
Yeah. And he says that Gyrick was hidden by a covert division of the UN. But now he's tracked him to Mexico. And he's going to like put together a team to go down there. And Rogue's like, fuck that. Let's just go. And Captain's like, no, I can't, like, you can't just show up in a Captain America uniform in Mexico. It might send a message. And she's like, yeah.
It's one of the worst things about being dressed up as the American flag. It's like basically everything you do does kind of represent the country.
Yeah. And she says, yeah, the message is going to be that you stand with mutants, like, unless you're saying that you don't. And, again, like, I don't think we have to belabor the politics of this, but it's so refreshing to, like, see this conversation in a cartoon like this. Capian says, like, my hands are tied. And she goes, oh, if your hands are tied, well, then you don't need this. Grabs his shield, flies up through the roof of the bunker, and just tosses his fucking shield into the mountains. I love this.
What a pain in the ass. Because that's a unique thing, that shield.
Yeah. You got to go get it.
He just ruined a couple of days of Captain America's life. I'm just like, fuck.
Think he's got like an Apple AirTag on that bad boy where he could track it down?
I don't think he does. It's vibranium. I feel like he would reject such technology. I think he's got to go like get a search team.
Yeah, absolutely.
Out there and just explain it to people.
He's going to it's going to be a $3 million project to recover the shield from the mountain.
Like, a task force together for it. Like, just like, fuck. I think it'd be really cool if they, in the second season, if the Avengers show up again and they do in the 90s for a little while, Captain America had a shield made of energy.
Right.
It'd be great if he just had that and they didn't talk about it or anything. He just like couldn't get it back.
He just couldn't find it.
in this universe, this is why he gets the energy shield.
But I love Rogue's attitude about this so much. Like, obviously this is coming from a place of grief and hurt and distress, but like, also, like, again, just smashing through all of the red tape she can find the person responsible for the death of literally millions of people.
If you're not going to help, fuck it.
Exactly.
Fuck you. Like, yeah, it's real good. Go fuck yourself. Back in Genosha, we get to see, recovery efforts here. We get Strong Guy, And the first time I think we had a voice for Strong Guy.
Yes, it is.
In the cartoon, I like that.
I do too.
Better bug off, kid. Like he's got a, you know.
Weirdly obsessed with this dude as a child in the comic books. Like I was really, great. I was really just like, just kind of fascinated with this dude's whole steez. So.
Yeah. He's a good character. Mm-hmm. Roberto and Jubilee are talking about, you know, what would have happened if they had been there. And Jubilee's basically saying like, you should come out to your mom. What if she just found out you died? You know, on the 5 o'clock news, I wouldn't want my parents to find out who I was when I died.
Yeah. And Roberto pushes back against this. It's like, look what happens when we don't hide. Like, yeah. You know, this is what I'm scared of. Like, I'm going to put myself out there and then this is going to happen. And again, just like great politics. Like, I mean, this is a very real conversation. I think, mutants as a metaphor for queerness is kind of a very, very worn out trope, but like never has been so much more relevant as it is here. Like, I think this is a great one. And Roberto was like, hey, like if I'm going to do this, can you come with me to support me?
Yeah. She says, of course.
And we see candles being lit for, like various mutants that have died. We see Callisto,
Leech.
Thank you. And Hank and Trish are having this conversation where she's like, you know, riots aren't going to work. Like normal people won't understand if the mutants begin rioting. And Hank, you talked about him hardening over this conversation and we see this here. He starts wondering like maybe Xavier's vision was wrong. Like maybe begging humans for tolerance was not the right way. That was what was wrong at the begin with. And like kind of calls her out for her reporting in front of the house when Genosha was tagged and it just walks off and leaves her.
Yep.
And this idea that this Genosha thing had real consequences and that our team is going through the fucking emotions of that is really, really great.
Yeah, they're getting angry, mm-hmm. you know, in a way that feels real. Yeah. Rogue, flies into Mexico, finds Gyrex jail, which is like a resort. You know, he's being taken care of, which is a big insult. Inside, he's doing lepidoptery. Doing butterfly shit, and Rogue comes in and he's real smug. I love this where he's like, I have no idea where Trask is, and you should know that Jean's probes aren't going to work, you know, against him, the person you're up against. You have no idea what you're going against. And she's just like, this isn't that kind of probe, and immediately takes off her glove.
Yes.
And starts absorbing her memories. We get a real clear picture of this, of Nimrod.
Yes.
Of this, which they've been hinting at in the opening credits and stuff like that. You know, if you know the comics, you know, you could have guessed this before. This is the episode that tips its hand mm-hmm. between this. And then also down in the basement, Captain America and Rogue seeing Operation Zero Tolerance, OZT on things.
According to the main writer of season one, that Bo guy, there's literally a hint for this in every single episode if you look hard enough. I didn't go through the trouble of trying to find every single one, but like there's glimpses of what this could be. Like they were trying to plant some seed real cleverly to reveal this stuff, which is good. Like I like that kind of stuff, so it works.
It kind of depends on what he considers a hint, right? Like if it's the opening credit stuff, like they've been hinting at stuff like that.
Yeah, there's a pair of, like time. Pictures in the background, like in the
gotcha.
The one I'm thinking of is the Forge and Storm episode. Like there's some pictures in the background of like Forge and somebody that kind of hints towards this and that kind of stuff. Like I don't remember them all. I had, when this was coming out, I'd seen a whole list or anything, but I didn't bother to go look it up because I'm a lazy podcaster, Gary.
Yeah, well, it also doesn't matter.
Yeah,
we know the thing
also
now.
She also gets a big healthy dose of psychic feedback and kind of gets knocked out here. And we switch back over to Genosha, where Cyclops and Jean are beginning to clear rubble. And Jean hears psychic echoes of all of the people dying and is kind of despairing, saying so many futures lost, so many past unfinished.
Did you notice that there's a bunch of rats crawling around here? Like they cover their mouth because it smells bad. There are corpses down here. And there are rats and the rats' eyes glow.
Oh no!
I
didn't pick up on that at all.
Mm-mm. Yeah, I wonder if the idea here is that Emma Frost is psychically like
projecting, you know, herself kind of
into a rat to like a cell phone booster, like a Wi-Fi extender. Or because at first I was like, shit, what is this?
A TP-Link, you know, TP-Link branded rodent.
Yeah, like rodents are Wi-Fi now. Black Mirror.
Yeah, I did not notice that, but that's a good pickup, and I think you're probably, like, they could be definitely hinting.
Yeah, that might have been what's going on.
again, Scott and Jean are trying to kind of put together their relationship, and here Scott apologizes for how complicated their things have gotten between them. And she's like, you know, whenever our lives not complicated, like, was it when I was, you were sacrificing yourself for me on the dark side of the moon? Was it, you know, when I was, you know, possessed by a cosmic force and eating planets? And I just really, really love the shot as she talks, like she walks up to some broken glass and we see her reflection like multiplied over the panes of glass. It's a really cool shot, and obviously like kind of thematic of the all of the different lives that she has carried and over the course of her lifetime. And then this is interrupted because she senses somebody, a fellow telepath, and they dig through the rubble, and we find none other than Emma Frost in her diamond form, which of course Beast calls out is you know, this is the first example of secondary mutation. This was obviously ripped directly from Grant Morrison's New X-Men, like all of this stuff. It's interesting that she's just a diamond form now, and they don't... Like in the comics, this is like, oh, everybody's going to have a secondary mutation. Like, we don't even get to that at all in this stuff. Like, there's just too much going on. Yeah.
They're opening up the idea, I think, perhaps for season two. Mm-hmm. Like, I will be a little disappointed if Emma's not part of season two.
Me too.
Of this, because they went to the trouble of having her be the sole survivor of this. They should have plans.
Yeah.
For her.
And with the way that the series ends, I could see her, like, especially at the beginning of season two, being a teacher at the mansion, right?
Yeah. When they're short on X-Men.
Exactly.
You know, at the end of the season. So Scott is really upset here. They all, and they get called back to the Blackbird. I love their morphs just hanging out in the Blackbird. Yeah. There. Because Trask sent them a message, this person they've been looking for, you know? And he's like, listen, you know, I didn't want this. Mr. Senator took my DNA. I had no idea this was going to happen. I had no idea it was going to be a mutant massacre. And they're like, why should we believe you? And at one point Wolverine's like, this is strange days. Like, we have to go.
Yeah.
We don't really have a choice. Like, we don't necessarily trust him, you know, Morph saying, oh, we can't trust this guy. We don't trust him, but we have to go meet with him in Madripoor to see what he has to say.
Yeah.
You know?
Meanwhile, Roberto and Jubilee have, arrived at his home. He's extremely nervous, but she, you know, reassures him very sweetly, and they meet his mother, who is like sipping wine in their, you know, fancy townhouse of a situation. And at first this all seems like kind of really, really sweet, where she's like, oh, this is such a relief that you're finally telling me, like, several of our we had several like fires and multiple houses as you grew up. Like, me and your father have always known. We were just waiting for you to feel comfortable enough to tell us. And she even thanks Jubilee for like helping Roberto come to them. But then she's like, oh, but now we have to figure out how to keep all of this private because we don't want the shareholders to know.
Yeah. We love you, but you can't be you can't be public. You can't be out of the closet, you know, is the idea. Pretty shitty.
Exactly.
That kind of thing. And also, like, we have to talk about the company you keep.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. Real shitty on a lot.
Yeah. Kind of showing the like, one of the reasons why I think that's good is it's showing the shade of shitty, you know, that you can be, like, of bigotry, right?
Yes.
Like, you imagine with the queer metaphor, you imagine a bigoted parent just being a homophobe who kicks their kid out. And this is not that, you know, she wants her son. She loves her son, you know, but she doesn't love her full son.
Yeah. The idea of like, oh, I love you and I accept you, but we can't tell anybody else. It's still just as shitty as the other, right?
It's just a different brand. Just as shitty, but it's like there's a whole spectrum of shitty. Yeah. None of it's acceptable.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. Rogue wakes up from the psychic feedback she received from Guy Rich, with Nightcrawler above her. They have, shown us the Day of the Dead in Mexico. So we kind of, the camera moves around and we see these candles being lit. And we see these masks and paintings and things like that, folks kind of celebrating. And Rogue admits that she's not ready to accept Gambit's death. And she kind of, you know, makes fun of herself. Like, you know, you got the, in referencing her friendship with Nightcrawler, you got the girl that goes bonkers over losing a boy. And Nightcrawler reassures her, like, hey, you did not get them killed, but you did help them live. And this causes Rogue to break down. Like, this finally kind of gets through the anger that she was using as a shield to kind of, you know, process her grief, or not process her grief. And she just begins to sob into Nightcrawler's arms. And as she looks up, she sees the rest of the team around her, like, ready to support her as well.
It's a good scene. I don't know why they're where they are. I don't know why after she passed out from Gyrick, they took her out to a Day of the Dead celebration outside the villa. And they're not in private. People are just coming up and doing their own mourning, like looking at Nightcrawler and Rogue. Like, I don't,
it's a weirdly blocked scene. Yeah.
It's really weirdly blocked. They were trying to like do some resonance with Remembrance of the Dead. Like, what if Day of the Dead was happening at the same time? And I'm like, well, yeah, fucking what if, but also that makes no sense. And people would be panicking about Nightcrawler being there. Like, imagine going to your Day of the Dead ritual to drop off your husband's wedding ring,
and there's a blue portrait demon
of him, and there's a fucking Nightcrawler about. You know, like, I don't know. It's it's a little bit poet for me, like a little clever.
It may be a little too pat. I will say that the actual emotion of the scene is really,
it's great.
It's carried by the voice actors. Like, she, the actor playing Rogue is obviously like, it has been doing this for a while and is also very, very good at it. Like, it's genuinely affecting. Meanwhile, Trask wakes up to this mysterious figure who just immediately starts choking and killing him. Like, we don't kind of really don't know what's going on here. This is supposed to be very strange.
He says, you know, you ruined my surprise here. And when he's there, he interferes with electronics. We get our, you know, he's listening, Trask listening to classical music while he's passed out. And then turns into one-eyed, one-eared, flying purple people eater.
Of course.
The novelty record. That is the musical motif for this this character.
Can I say how strange it is to have like a real song in a cartoon?
Yeah, it doesn't seem like the kind of, like, X-Men never did that before.
No,
Like, you know, for the right, you don't have purple people eater money.
I don't even know. I don't know. It just feels very, very weird. I had the same reaction like when I watched the Mario live action movie. Like, because there's like moments in that where they just drop like, you know, top 100 Billboard hits, and I'm like, y'all have like fucking thousands of hours of Mario music to go through. Like,
why would you ever do this?
Why would
you? It's like the worst thing of that movie.
It's really fucking irritating to me when I watched it, dude. Like, I didn't even mind like Chris Pratt's performance as Mario as much as I thought I was going to. Like, everything in that movie is actually fairly good except for those musical stingers.
It's such a kids movie thing because they have to introduce kids to pop music. You have to have a little montage to Take on Me in a kids movie for some reason.
I just don't get
it. The Madagascar kids have to move it. I don't.
I hate it.
I don't
so
really
much,
get it,
man.
When I was a kid, I wasn't like losing my mind for it or anything either. Like, I tried to think of myself as a kid. I was like, the movies I loved as a kid didn't have that shit.
Yeah.
You know, it had original scores. Like, Labyrinth had new David Bowie songs. It wasn't like, well, just throwing a couple of Rolling Stones songs there because like they were popular on the radio and kids would dig them.
And like, there's some movies. This is like a pet peeve of mine. Like, this is a thing that really, really bugs me. Like, watching, I think it was the latest Suicide Squad movie, which felt like, or maybe it was one of the Harley Quinn movies that felt like it was 90% music video. Like, I just felt like I was watching a music video there every time. Cause like, now there's another musical. Okay. We get it.
I hate soundtrack drops. Like, yeah, at this point, like, basically, like, I would prefer just to have scores.
Me too. Like, absolutely. Yeah.
At this point, like, it's not worth, I would throw out a lot of baby with bathwater to get rid of them. Like, you know, a needle drop with a pop song is good. But so often it's just very obvious, you know, someone just says like the song just matches whatever the scene is about.
Yeah.
And it makes it feel like, it feels condescending to me. Like,
I blame Guardians of the Galaxy. Like, I feel like that was the movie that, especially with the superhero stuff, that really kicked that off. And not every movie needs it. Like, it was unique in that one. In fact, they kind of played it out in that movie.
100%. And like in Guardians, it's the characters listening to the music.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, okay, it makes sense. He had this tape. It's from his parents. Like, it's diegetic. And then it just became, or you think about Sucker Punch. Right? Oh. Like, that movie wasn't very successful, but that was a huge movie for just like, let's have really obnoxious needle drops that, you know, match what's happening.
That's what's his name, Zach.
That's Snyder.
That's Snyder. Yeah, because
that's the Snyder man.
I got super high one morning and watched that 3-hour Justice League.
Remix. I haven't seen the Snyder cut of it. I saw the regular version in theaters with Brayden, and it's dumb.
It's fucking, dude. It was even super high. It did not. Like, I was just like, maybe I'll go read an encyclopedia instead. literally anything.
This sucks so bad. I'm going to read some Justice League comics. Tell me what Martian Manhunter is up to. Oh, that's how much this sucks.
Back to the X-Men. They arrive at this building in Madripoor. And inside they find guards that are all knocked out via sleeping gas. Trask had given them like a secret code, I guess, about
and remember, the machine is never out of diet.
Yeah.
And Morph orders a diet Pingo, And that's what opens this, the secret thing. Like, what if somebody wants a diet Pingo?
Yeah. It's very weird. It would be, yeah, I don't know.
Not a good secret.
As they move inside, we see all of these like vaguely sentinel looking machines, but they're like cybernetic bodies and heads in glass cases. And the guards here are also all knocked out. But they're also wearing the same uniforms that the guards that were protecting Gyrick are wearing, with the OZT on the label. And this is where they find Trask outside on a balcony. I love that your secret hideout has a balcony outside.
Just out there.
Yeah.
They call him, like, I don't like that they call him wannabe Oppenheimer, and then he does the Oppenheimer.
I've become death thing. Yeah, I thought that was kind of cheesy.
He could just say I'm become death if he wants to, I guess. Mm-hmm. You know, that'd be fine. You know, and he's going to kill himself. He doesn't like what he did, you know?
Yes.
And these new sentinels are coming for you. Mm-hmm. He basically explains, like, I build these for Sinister.
Yes.
You know, these are decades ahead of ours. I don't know how he gets it. But that's all I got. And he jumps, Rogue manages to grab him and says, you know, tell us a little bit more. And he's like, I have nothing. And she goes, same, and drops him. This is done in big slow motion, like frame by frame. Nightcrawler says, what have you done? You know, this is a big deal.
Yeah, we have
Rogue just letting him die.
We have reactions from all of the team, just about, like, where everybody's shocked. Morph has this thing where they say, like,
what are we now?
Is this who we are now?
Yeah.
And Wolverine is like in full support. Wolverine's like, fuck yeah, murder that dude.
That's what I would have done, you know? And Rogue starts justifying her actions. She's like, oh, he killed Gambit. That was my man. And I love that she's going to give this speech and gets cut off.
Yes.
You know, like, the speech wasn't going anywhere. Like, I didn't need to see the X-Men have a debate of whether it was okay to kill the genocide monster. You know, there's not time for that. Like, that's not very in the spirit of X-Men 97. That's the kind of an old school X-Men. Like, if this were in the 90s, the next episode would be like the trial of Rogue.
Yeah, we have to go through an extended thing to make this
happen. Jurisprudence of this would be called into question. Yeah. Whereas, like, we don't have time for that. The stakes are too high. This is a more serious cartoon. That doesn't matter.
And then, you said, the stakes get raised because we hear a voice saying terminate units, mutants, and the entire balcony explodes. And it turns out that Trask has not fallen all the way to the ground, or we saw him fall all the way to the ground.
Yeah, he fell, but he got back up.
But now he has risen. Now he's flying, and he's facing away from them, and his head twists all the way back around, Exorcist style. And he starts basically blasting this building. He's become some sort of weird human sentinel. And as he starts blasting this building, like, the X-Men fall. And we've seen this a couple of times where Cyclops really embraces, like, his leadership role, where he tells Jean, like, you get the debris. I'll clear out this. Like, they're protecting everybody from, like, even as he falls, like, he's sending out orders to protect it. Like,
thinking fast.
Exactly. Yeah. Thank you. This is all looks cool as shit. Like, this is great.
It's really good. You know, so they try to fight, you know, and they're like, man, Trask took Rogue down in one hit. We can't pull any punches. Morph turns into Quicksilver and punches him a bunch, but gets neutralized. The X-Men kind of go down one by one.
Yes.
You know, they keep trying to take him out. The one thing I don't like about this is when he's fighting Jean and they're both just two blurry things punching each other in the sky.
Yeah.
I think that looks bad. But other than that, the good fight. I love Cyclops, like, absolutely unloading and Trask just walking through the beam.
I kind of have an internal self bet on what you're going to think is like two anime, and the gene and versus human sentinel fight. I thought was definitely like Gary's going to mention like that he doesn't like this.
Yeah, it's dumb. They just turn into lights that slam into each other in the sky,
and it doesn't even look like Gene's power. Like, that's the thing that irritates me. Yeah, like,
wait, and also what can the sentinel do?
Yeah,
like what power is the sentinel expressing for this? Like, it is. We're talking in the green room. I've been rewatching Deadwood. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, obviously incredible show. I'm going to make a bold claim. I think that Deadwood, in terms of visual media, is my favorite depiction of violence.
Okay.
Hands down. I don't think that any other show makes violence seem as scary and as real as that show does. And that's always how I prefer my violence. Like, the X-Men wouldn't work like that. I don't need, you know, Jean pulling Bastion down and, like, ripping out his eye and shit. Mm-hmm. It's a spectrum, right? Like, if you go from the Deadwood to there's just lights hitting each other.
Yeah, I get
spectrum. Like, I want something a little bit closer to the middle than just lights hitting each other.
That makes perfect sense. And, like, we've complimented, like, how Rogue was fighting earlier in this episode.
Yeah, yeah.
Where she was like literally picking up mechs and like fighting. And it wasn't just like fireballs hitting each other in the sky or whatever. And I think you and I have both complained a lot about like, oh, it's a blue laser versus red laser fight kind of situation. Yeah. Like, we don't like that either. Like, that's kind of boring. So
I'm definitely like a big grump about anime shit, but really I just want to see what's happening. Mm-hmm. You know, I just don't want it to be like, I don't know why this is happening or what it is. And generally, the show's really good about it. The next episode has fucking incredible scenes.
Oh, dude, I can't wait to action. Talk about that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like, the action is absolutely lit in that thing. And it's, you can always see what's happening. Like, it's just butter blocked.
After Jean goes down, Cyclops basically just unloads from his visor.
Yeah.
I love that the Sentinel just walks over and grabs him by the face and slams
him on the ground.
Pushes
through.
Yeah.
Like, pushes so through his beam, good. Like... You know, because the beam is pushing force, it's kinetic force, mm-hmm. you know, and he's just stronger than it, you know, and he grabs him and pushes his head on the ground. He's gonna like crush his skull, you know. Tell me, Orphan, how does it feel to be abandoned by the future? Super
great.
Good.
Super great. Yeah.
But a grenade lands right next to Cyclops, explodes. It's obviously an EMP, yes. Takes out all the lights. Trask collapses and Cable says, hey, you know, a bundle of EMP grenades is the best way to take out these guys. Mm-hmm.
Jean very quickly like sees in Cable's mind and realizes who Cable is, and her and Cyclops kind of realize it at the same time almost, and Cable's like, hey, get out of my mind, like, you're not her, referring yep. to his mother, which is of course Madeline. And Cable is there with news like, y'all think you're fighting Mr. Sinister, but he's working for someone else, someone far, far worse. And sure enough, we cut over to a different kind of lab, where Sinister is talking to, again, this mysterious figure who we're just going to go ahead and say is Bastion. Like, we don't really have to be around the bush about this.
The dialogue here is great, and Bastion's voice performance is great.
Yes.
I could have sworn Bastion was like a guy. Like, I was like, oh, this is a, you know, an actor I've heard of. He's not. He's a new guy, but like, he's just, it's a real confident.
I looked it up, you know, because I was convinced it was, is it Clarence Thomas, the guy, the voice actor? He's in
Supreme
Deadwood
Court
too.
Justice?
No, definitely not Supreme Court.
You're thinking of Clancy Brown.
Clancy Brown. I don't know how you got that from Clarence Thomas. You were.
I don't know how I did either, man.
But I am definitely thinking.
We're good friends, everybody.
That's some like fucking podcast marriage bullshit that just happened right there. Jesus Christ.
I don't know if I'm comfortable with that.
Get us on a game of Pictionary. We're gonna rock the fucking house.
So he's the guy. I love the lines here, like Sinister saying, your stupid little puppet like ruined the surprise. They just fought one Sentinel. You should have just waited for all the Sentinels so we could overwhelm them. And he's just like, you've been trying that since 1992. The things you do are my model for what not to do.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, like, you're giving me advice is ridiculous. You lose against the X-Men.
Yes.
You know, and it just, it's great. Like, it's really compelling dialogue.
And he reveals to Sinister that he picked up an alien broadcast, because, you know, they were just broadcasting this shit in space on the public airwaves. And now he knows that Xavier is alive, that the X-Men have been hiding the idea that the Xavier has been alive.
He thinks that. He thinks that the X-Men are, you know, have been lying about that. The X-Men don't know Xavier's alive. He's also planning to use this as a propaganda thing, because the thing that he captured is him announcing he's going to marry the Shi'ar and glory to the Imperium. Like, it's a multifaceted war. It's a PR victory. I love that he's going to use that to scare people about the Shi'ar.
So not that
in the next episode,
not that it really, I guess maybe it is kind of important. I thought at the end of the 90s series that they'd literally like, They were pretending that Xavier was dead, but like he flew off to the Shi'ar. I thought, like, and then we pick up from there at the beginning of this series. Like,
you could be right. I can't remember I can't remember that because it's the fifth season of the old animated series. I remember
it's
in
been
this
like
one,
10
I thought,
years since we've watched that.
I think when he comes back, I thought they were surprised.
Maybe so.
But
maybe,
I could be wrong with that.
We'll see. I guess probably the next time we record.
Like, how when they react. Show him with the Shi'ar, they seem shocked. Mm. In the next one, but I don't know. I would need to rewatch the fifth season of the old animated series, and it's awful.
And it's not great. Yeah, it's not super good. We see finally Bastion walking into what looks like an abandoned building, and he kicks on a jukebox, which starts playing music, which again is kind of weird. And he walks over to where he has been hiding, none other than Magneto. And he has this great big villain monologue speech. Bastion is full of monologues, we're gonna find out. But he talks about making things pliable. And as he does so, he gets a straight razor as he starts shaving Magneto's face, and tells him, you know, as long as you listen and obey, you were born for this. Like, he's got plans to use Magneto.
This idea that you'll remain pliable, you know, it's obviously a metaphor for, like, this won't hurt as long as you don't resist.
Yes.
You know, he says he has plans for Magneto. Magneto gets let out, you know, a little spoiler, right? I assume people who want to watch the show have watched the show. I'm going to be really curious in the last two episodes to see if the show ever reveals why he kept Magneto.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like something he would do. It makes sense from a show perspective, Magneto would still be around because of what he has to do in the next episode. But I don't understand why Bastion would do it. In the future that we're going to get, this is getting into the next episode a little bit, but just in the future, Bastion's plan is to use mutants to, like, change the world, like, basically as tools, as slaves. Mm-hmm. And Magneto would be a good slave, you know? So I get that part of, but you'd think that he would know the danger of it.
But also, like, there's probably, like, I mean, Magneto is one of the most powerful mutants alive. He's one of the most powerful Omega level mutants, even if you, like, limit your category. So I can definitely see, like, oh, well, I want this dude to be a slave in the future.
Yeah.
But also, like, you just killed millions of your, of the slaves that you were.
Slaves. Yeah. Like, why this one?
Yeah.
You know, I wonder, I can't remember if there's a line that talks about it at all.
I'll be curious because there's nothing in the next episode about it.
No.
And I'll be curious if it pops up in the last two, but the last two episodes are so crazy and so dense with Bastion saying wild shit that it's really, really hard to keep up with. So
I'm not that worried about it. If not, I'm not trying to ding. I didn't notice it at all in the first pass, which is how you can tell it fine. It's fine. It flies.
It would be weird to have an X-Men plotline where Magneto didn't come back to life at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. Can't kill Magneto this early.
Yeah. And that's the end of the episode. So we've set up a scary new villain who's even scarier than Mr. Sinister. The X-Men are going to be in a fight for their lives, and we're going to enter the three-part finale. I love that we just committed to having three parts of a cartoon. Like, it's just so very good.
It's like basically a movie.
Yeah, super excited.
Thanks everybody for listening.
Thank you. If you want to support us, go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv. Donate a couple of bucks, leave ratings and reviews, do all that kind of stuff. Duckfeed is an incredible network that I'm extremely proud to even be a small part of. And a lot of it is because of listeners helping us out, be the best people we can be. So thank y'all for doing that. And we'll be back next week with more X-Men.
Yeah, we appreciate you. Talk to you next week.
Bye.